Hi, today's May 7th, 2017. This is Mobile Podcast number 205. Tata Gossel, my good friend John Westfall. And we have a whole bunch of good friends as guest panelists today. Let's see, I'll just start around the screen instead of alphabetically, starting with Sven Johansson, whose name I spelled wrong in the show notes, but we'll get it right in the pot in the podcast blog. Don Sorsinelli, whose name, I got it right this time.
You did, on the first try, too. Without the use of alcohol, too,
that's
to
right,
help.
That's right.
That's impressive.
And now you'll probably screw up the last name, which is easiest of all.
Here's the problem, right? I live in Hawaii. I don't speak Bostonian. Bostonian? I don't speak Bostonian. So Mr. Jack Cook and I, we've had a heck of a time trying to communicate Pidgin English, you know, whatever the heck that Boston thing is. And we're waiting for the Skype translator to do us, you know, the two-way translation from Pidgin English to Bostonian. But not yet. Hey, Jack, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Okay,
And I should note that if John Westfall, the good doctor, sounds a little bit different today, he was inspired by our previous podcast with my friend Ryan Ozawa, who used an Apple AirPod to record microphone to record this podcast. So he is using Apple AirPod also. Say hello, John, so people know what you sound like.
Which means I will have to download this podcast afterward to figure out what I sound like.
Right, and compare it to last week.
Yeah, and see which one I like better. And then you'll hear that in the future versions.
Right.
Unfortunately, people can't see John. He does look rather fetching wearing them.
I do.
I didn't even notice he had them in years.
It is the chic of the AirPods and the post-semester glow that is about me. now that we have finished, I've been telling everyone that this was the semester that I felt that we were all in an abusive relationship with this semester and had to get out of. So we're happy down here at Delta State that the semester has finished.
Okay, here we go. The reason I asked our mutual friends, Sven, Don, and Jack, to join us today is because I wanted to get their thoughts on Windows 10S, which apparently stands for Streamlined for Security and Superior Performance. Nobody's told Microsoft those are three words, but that's okay. I guess it should be SSS. And the Microsoft...
That's better than SS.
Yeah, I guess so. And a Microsoft Surface laptop. But we'll save that for nearly the last. I want to start off with a mini rant, since John was talking about abusive relationships. And that's the Lightning headphone jack on iPhone 7 and 7 Plus. So it comes with a headphone jack, with an ear pod, with a Lightning jack, of course. And it comes with one adapter. And I thought, hey, you know, I should go pick up another adapter just in case I lose the little tiny one that comes with the iPhone 7. So I went to the local Apple store, and they were, of course, sold out, because apparently everybody else has the same idea. Now, this thing announced since, what, last October? So it's pretty funny to me that they would still be out in May, right? Half a year later. Any case, not critical. Hopefully I won't lose the ones I have and can still use my 3.5-meter headphone jack that's on the noise cancellation earbuds I use when I travel. But in any case, that's my mini rant. Apple, I think you made a mistake. Let's fix this in whatever the heck comes next.
Todd, you missed the boat here. You're obviously supposed to be using Bluetooth headphones.
That's right.
I hope nobody in Cupertino hears this podcast, because they may be looking for you afterwards.
Well, as a matter of fact, I did just recently buy some Bluetooth earbuds, and they're okay. But, you know, wired headsets still deliver a more stable audio stream, in my opinion. It's okay for podcasts, I guess.
In that vein, you usually ask if I got anything new.
Yeah.
I do have the Beats X2 wireless.
And
I find them really good. They're very... I used them on an airplane. I did it on purpose to see if I'd get beat up for having, you know,
I have seen
transmitters.
I don't travel very often, of course, but the few times I have been traveling in the last year or so, I've noticed a lot of people using Bluetooth earbuds or even the big, you know, cans. And I haven't seen anybody get dragged down the aisle and you know,
yeah,
removed from the plane forcibly.
Mary Jo got beat up for using her mouse that way, but
really,
yeah, it was probably a year ago, but they told her she couldn't do that.
Wow.
Okay.
I wonder what the difference is.
She put it under a tray and did it on her lap.
I've found that regardless of the phone I'm using, I tend to use Bluetooth now more than ever for when I go to the gym. I used to be one of those that loved to listen to music. I had a corded headset, you know, and you either had to wear shorts with pockets in it and then hope that whatever you were doing didn't catch the cord.
Right.
You know, or so it's gotten to the point where it's not very common for me anymore to actually use the wired. I keep them handy just in case, but it's mainly because in case the battery on my you know, the battery drains on my Bluetooth earbuds.
Yeah, and that's the problem for me with battery powered earbuds, by the way, like Bluetooth ones, is that, you know, unless I'm going to neighbor island from Honolulu, anytime I step on a plane, I'm flying a minimum 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, that's a starter. That's a starter trip for me. And I would just...
I was just going to say, though, it's interesting to me that we've had Bluetooth headsets for so long, and I've really only in the last year been happy with my options. I had a headset I loved until about 2007 when it died, and then for about 10 years... it just seemed like every Bluetooth headset just wasn't all that great. In the last year or so, I've actually got two Bluetooth headsets that I like.
Right,
so.
You bought the Beats, the cans, right? The big ones.
Yeah, well, they're not too big. They're the Solo 3s, so I keep those to watch videos and things like that on my iPad mini. But the AirPods have been really reliable for me. So I think we're just in general entering sort of an era where Bluetooth headphones are getting into a better state. Sort of, we hit it in 2007 with voice for telephone calls, and now 10 years later, we're finally getting to reliable streaming for high definition audio and such.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually used Bluetooth my personal car setup supports APTX, and I've used that with an Android phone that supports it as well. And I'll be honest with you, the quality is fantastic.
Don, I don't know what APTX is.
It's another, I guess, lack of a better word, it's another Bluetooth profile. Mm. Or it's a variation of a profile. It's again, getting to better sound quality.
Okay.
And it really does. I think John's right. I think we just evolve. We continue to evolve. The focus at first was reliability, which was quite the challenge.
Yeah.
Back in the day,
our buddy.
Then
Ed.
It became who I still push his buttons every once in a while, just for good old time's sake. Just bring up Bluetooth randomly. First it was reliability, just stability. Then it was the audio improvements, like you said, voice. And now it seems to be continual, you know, focus on now better sound quality coming through the pipe, not just voice, but like you said, music. And they're getting there. I agree. I'm curious, Fenn, how's you said they are really good.
They sound really good. The reason I waited for them until they came out, it was one of those things that Apple announced and then waited 6 months to deliver it.
Yeah.
But the neck band is really, really flexible and lightweight, not like some of the other ones that, you know, are a big thing hanging around your neck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they charge off a lightning connector. Our lightning power supply. So clearly, you're an Apple person if you get one of these, or you need to.
How much do they cost, Wynn?
They're $149, I think.
Oh, so not cheap.
Yeah.
No, they're not cheap, but decent set of Bluetooth headsets. You know, the Solos, whatever else. I've also got a little $39 set of things from Amazon that are not bad either.
Yeah, that's what I have for my workouts. And amazingly, they're extremely reliable.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, Todd, when we're talking about battery life, I'm always making a point. My biggest fear is that I'm gonna run out of juice. So I'm always making sure they're charged.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, these headsets of today remind me of phones about 10 years ago when we were always making sure we were near a charge. Yeah, it's like, okay, I'm taking it, I'm going to use it for a little while. Where's my nearest plug? You know, it's sort of that way now with some of these Bluetooth headsets.
Or even further back, but during the days of the pocket PC and even more further back, the handheld PC, I remember I used to carry on a bag of AA batteries. you know, just to make sure I had something to do while I was on a long trip.
We could have used those power bricks back in the day, don't you?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, those have been nice.
I gave up using a Bluetooth headset for my phone to make calls. But I did pick up a new Bose QuietComfort 35.
Nice. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And just because of the noise canceling. So if I'm on a plane, I mean, it really is amazing. But even around here, if I'm downstairs with her and she's watching TV and I'm watching a movie on my Surface, I put these on. And it's just amazing. And I probably get a full day. I mean, 20 hours anyways.
That's impressive. Impressive.
My wife has a set of those that she uses. It's really
good. And what also is particularly good with this is that it's connected to my phone. So if I'm listening to, watching a movie and listening to a movie or music, and the phone rings, I can connect and talk while I have this on.
Oh, so it has multiple profiles.
Nice. Yeah.
So it works out pretty well.
This one does too.
Yeah.
I can do the same thing. I can tie it to an iPad or a Mac, and then if the phone rings, it'll pick it up too.
Yeah. I'm poor and I've been buying, like $20 Bluetooth earbuds when they go on sale on Amazon.
Well, there you go.
The latest one I got was $20 and has multiple profiles, which surprised me.
Yeah.
But generally, I have one Bluetooth headset for each device I have. You know, I'm like, which one goes with this one? You know, it's kind of annoying. But anyway. Yeah. Okay. Next item is not annoying. One of the things that John and I were talking about a while back was Google Home. I think some of you bought Google Home, right? Sven, you buy everything, so you probably have a Google
Home. Nope, didn't buy one of those.
Oh, okay. I think
got Frank a couple
did.
Of Echoes.
Maybe Frank.
I don't want them to argue with each other.
But they're too expensive. They're like $120 or something.
Well, yeah.
In my opinion. Yeah. Given I already have an Echo that I'm happy with. But I keep saying that if it dropped to $50, I'd buy it. I'd buy a Google Home just to play with it.
Oh, $50. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You kind of almost can now. So Google released something called the Google Voice Kit for Raspberry Pi. Yeah. And so you can take a $30, or I guess it's $40, $40 Raspberry Pi, put this kit on, which is, I think, not too expensive. In fact, I think it comes free with one of the Raspberry Pi magazines. And you can create your own Google, essentially Google Home,
Google Box.
Yeah, cardboard box.
The only thing I wonder about with that is Google Voice, for a while, had a requirement that you had to tie it to at least one landline. No, in order to create a Google Voice.
Yeah, but this is really a Google Voice.
No, this isn't. Yeah,
it's
bad name.
It's a misnomer. Yeah, yeah it is.
You're right.
They should be calling it Google Home.
Yeah.
Or Google I said Google Box. It's when it's a little cardboard box.
That's but for whatever reason, they
okay, now I get what it is, stupid thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's
still
a,
stupid, but.
It's a voice input output for Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the Raspberry Pi because it reminds me of, all of us with our common tie to phones. We've all known over the years there's been certain phones that are like the workhorse that survive everything and are used for everything and you can flash them with multiple OSs and crazy stuff like that. And I swear that's what I think. Whenever I see a Raspberry Pi, it's like this amazing little piece of hardware that just keeps on going and going and going and is used in so many different ways. I think it's cool. I agree with you guys. I think that Google's got to do something. They don't have to compete with the Echo. They need to compete with the Dot at this point.
Yes.
In a way, this is a roundabout way of competing, but that's not going to, that doesn't fly in the average home. I mean, the average homeowner is not going to go and do this. And I think that's, for what it's worth, when I look at when I look at the Echo and the Dot, and all I can think to myself is, you talk about not only effectiveness but simplicity of design. You know, and that's where that to me is where it hits a home run. And I mean, to a certain extent, obviously Google Home has done that with their first incarnation.
You know, one thing I think this thing will do is you'll get hobbyists that will build one of these things and they'll start writing skills.
Yeah.
That will
And right now that's what Home needs. It needs more things you can do with it.
Yeah, that's they got a lot of ground to catch up on in that regard. I agree.
In fact, my brother, who is not a computer person, he ended up building a Raspberry Pi.
No kidding!
Amazing what he's done with it. I mean, I'm really impressed that he's jumped into it full force and has done a pretty good job.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the interesting aspects of Raspberry Pi that I bring up that I heard a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine works for a university up in Canada in their IT department, and they just replaced, they have this, like many universities do, vendors in the area, you know, the local pizza chain, all that, can accept credits off of a student's ID card for meals and all that sort of thing. The way they were doing that in the past was they would deploy like a Dell Slim desktop that had the software and then a reader and all that. And they had a lot of trouble because whenever that would break, instead of calling the university's IT department, some computer geek at the place would figure, oh, I can fix this. It's just a big computer. And they'd, you know, be down for weeks and not know what to do. So they recently swapped all that out with Raspberry Pis, but they can lock in secure little enclosures. And now when it breaks, they have to call.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the footprint on these are just absolutely amazing to me. That's the thing I'm always amazed by is, you know, what you can do. You can do so much with something so small. And yeah, we kind of expect that from the highly technical parts of our society. But for just about anybody to have access to this is pretty cool.
Not to mention that you can clone the SD card. And so if you are deploying it and something breaks, just write a new SD card, take it out, pop it in, and it solves 99% of your problems.
And the price. I said $39 earlier. Yeah. I think it's actually $34.99 or something.
So yeah.
The Raspberry Pi 3. So amazingly cheap to get started. Plug a keyboard, maybe a mouse and a display, and kind of you're off and running. I think the Raspberry Pi 3, does it have Wi-Fi built in, or do you still have to add Wi-Fi to it? I can't remember.
I thought the 3 did.
Yeah.
If I remember, the 3 did. Yeah. Amazing.
Okay, next up, also kind of amazing, and I thought you guys would be interested in this since, you know, we're all old-time phone guys. And I say this, you know, as the five of us, 10, 12, more longer, we were kind of oddballs. Well, okay, we're still oddballs, but
much change.
Yeah. But we were really considered oddballs when we were out and about in the real world with our little headphones on, wired at that time, and our phones, because most people weren't using headsets with cell phones back then. In fact, most people didn't have smartphones back then. And we were really, really kind of out there with our, especially you, Don. I remember you were on the phone all the time with your headset on, even when you were at conferences.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, in our group, that was not unusual, but walking around, you know,
I was too comfortable. That was my, that was my problem, was I was too comfortable doing that all the time.
Yeah. But it was unusual when you go outside of the techie group that we were part of.
Yeah.
And now today, what I wanted to, the last topic before we get into the Microsoft stuff is, I saw an NPR report that the CDC, which, you know, does from time to actually annually does a telephone survey of telephone use. You know, what are you using? You know, who are you? Do you have kids in the house? That kind of stuff. And for the first time, the CDC data indicates that, the majority of US phones have cell phones only for telephone without a landline. And it's amazing to me.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just having this conversation a few days ago with a friend, and because we were kind of talking about, you know, where that leads, and it's Interestingly, the person I was talking with is a little bit older, comes from an older school, and definitely not a techie school. Like we were. And her opinion was very point blank that how could you not have a landline? Mm-hmm. I think it's very generational. Number one, I think number two, it's a little bit about what kind of life you're leading. And by this, I guess the best way to describe it is depending on what you do, what you need. In some cases, not having a landline can be a hindrance. There are still companies when it comes to if you're looking for loans or things like that, not having a home landline is still considered a detriment.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's yeah. It's almost like a, I hate to say it, but it's this strange, it's almost like a credit kind of check thing. But I think it's just a matter of time. As we're seeing a population graduating from, younger people either graduating from school or just going out on their own. When you're starting fresh, it's very easy to say, this is my quote unquote home phone when you're single and this is your one line. And I think it's just going to continue to evolve that way. I think it's interesting because at this point at my house, we still do have a landline, but mm-hmm. to be perfectly honest with you, 99% of the calls that come in on that landline, we ignore and let it go to voicemail because if it's somebody that really wants to talk to us, they typically either call myself, my wife, or either of my two kids who mm-hmm. each have their own cell phones directly. So it's that line is more for solicitations than anything else at this point.
You know, and that brings up two interesting things. You know, one, if you are getting somebody to do some telephone survey work from you, you really mm-hmm. need to make sure what their methodology is, because if they are only going to landlines, they are now missing over half the population in the United States.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I'm probably the weirdest one here. I had a landline for a long time, like we all mm-hmm. did, and I transferred over that to Comcast Voice, which is still the landline as far as they're concerned. Mm-hmm. I ported that number to a cell number.
I know people have done that.
Mm-hmm. I still have that. I got a Lumia 640 to put it on, and that stays at home. It sits on the charger, and I got a mm-hmm. little Bluetooth appliance that connects that to the rest of my house network.
Yeah, I've seen that at Costco.
So I've still got all the same wireless phones sitting around the house that I always had, but it's technically it's an AT&T cell phone.
Well, it's interesting.
But it's listed as home phone every time I write it down.
Yeah. When you mention that, I've got a weird situation now in that as a remote worker, my work line, my old landline that mm-hmm. was my work line, is simply forwarded to my work mobile number. Mm. So technically my work mobile number is my office line. And one of two situations exists. One is as Sven described, I have the same thing here in my at my desk. I actually have a phone that's just sitting there with the SIM in it. It's at my desk. If it rings, I answer it. I don't take it with me. If I really need to carry it and be mobile, I've got an Android phone with dual SIM capability. And I will actually put my personal SIM and my work SIM both into that phone. Hmm. And go out the door because I can't stand carrying two phones, which amazingly in 2017, especially in the U.S. workplace, is way too common.
It is.
I mean, you still find people that have to carry two phones all the time, mostly because the vast majority of people don't know that there's a market for dual SIM phones. Mm-hmm. But it's funny when you mention that. I go through the same thing. I have this phone sitting here. I'm looking at it right now, and it's basically my quote unquote, my office line, that sits, but it's a mobile number.
Right. My question to you guys is at your home, mm-hmm. Do you have a superior cellular, connectivity?
It's decent.
It's better than used to be.
It's not 10 bars,
Well, I will say that years ago when I moved to a new area where I no longer had T-Mobile coverage in my house. I had it on my deck, but not in the house. I actually switched to Verizon purely to get coverage, since I have never had a landline. So it is definitely one of those concerns when you go completely mobile, if you can actually get a signal in the middle of your house and, you know, your basement or something like that. That could be a problem if you can't. Yeah.
It does require to have an internet service, but my son moved into an apartment and his AT&T coverage went to hell. He just went down. They gave him a microcell and he was fine. But that goes over the, you know, the internet until it hits AT&T. Everybody has that.
Until a couple of years ago, I had to go. I don't have a very large house, you know, so we're not talking wall penetration problems. But in order to get a voice call on my AT&T cell phone, I had to step out of my home, walk 25 feet due south in order to get signal. But they put up the cell tower a couple of years ago, and that solved that.
We have here in just outside of Boston, sometimes I have one bar, sometimes I have four bars. My wife has, I have AT&T. My wife has Verizon. The reason why we have that is because up in Maine, I never can connect on my cell more often than not, unless the clouds are just right. But my wife can with Verizon.
Yeah.
Well,
they do have the biggest network. I mean, that part of their, you know, their spiel is correct as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
And it's not just the biggest network, right? They have the lowest
frequencies. Part of that's bands, too.
Yeah.
The lowest frequencies.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
you know, lower frequencies go farther.
Yep. And through walls.
Or less bandwidth. You know, what the heck? You know?
Yeah.
Not a lot of bandwidth on phone, on talking.
Yeah. So it really depends. And that's why I have, let me see. Oh, we just
found somebody.
Yeah. I'll add him back. I will add him back. Or he'll add himself back. Hang on, folks. We have a little technical difficulty.
I like how as soon as we went away with Don, Sven took out his phone to take a picture of us.
Yeah.
I think that means he just wanted to be a bigger person on the picture himself.
No, actually, I'm still a little tiny. I'm still a little tiny.
You've got two
John,
blocks.
You got big. You're about life size.
I try.
The other thing that's interesting, you know, from my perspective as an old guy, is, you know, I am an Army brat, so I spent my entire childhood moving around. And I think we may have lost Jack, too, by the way. I'm not sure.
No, I'm here.
I got him.
I'm here.
And so, you know, and I'm not much of a letter writer, as in, you know, physical ink and pen type letter writer. So I basically lost touch with everybody I ever knew. But today, if your child, and by child, I mean, you know, like a teenager or preteen or whatever, has a phone, that number can be with them for the rest of their life.
Their life, yeah.
And they can stay in contact with their, you know, their cohorts of various, you know, epochs of their life forever, which is kind of amazing to me. You know, that plus things like Facebook and all of those sort of social things. It's just amazing. My daughter's graduating from college pretty soon. And, you know, I can't remember the last time I saw anybody from that period of my life. But for them, it's a piece of cake to stay in touch with all of those folks. Mm-hmm. If they choose forever, you know, if not, not forever. Mm-hmm. But it's their choice. And it's an easy one to make. It's something that I think none of, well, maybe John. John's young enough. But most of us didn't have that.
I had a social media black hole, actually. It's kind of interesting because when I came through undergrad, that was before social media really took off, but after sort of, it was still in the era of email and IM and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So ironically, when Facebook came around and became the way for people to catch up, all of the high school people that I didn't really care to know what they were doing, they all found me, and I, you know, I now have connection with them, but the people who I went to graduate with, I don't have any idea how to track them down. It was a weird sort of transition period, and people from grad school, I do have them on Facebook, but undergrad, it's very sparse. So it looks like I didn't ever go to college, because that's where seemingly all my students have all their friends from, or the, you know, 100 people that lived in their dorm, they all friended them on Facebook. Yeah, you know, that sort of deal.
Yeah, but and you know, maybe kids don't talk on voice anymore. There's Don, he's back.
Hey, John, you're back.
just as we're talking about call quality and internet and everything else, suddenly it all went away.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Sven had something to do with it, because as soon as you left, he took a picture of you being gone. So if we have to throw someone under the bus, it's him.
Okay, now the main part that I really wanted to talk to you guys about is this whole Windows 10S and the Microsoft Surface Laptop. Let me preface this by saying it has been a long time since Microsoft updated their main Surface line, which to me is the Pro line. I'm a Surface Pro user myself. I think almost all of you use a Surface Pro of some kind, except for Don. Don's shaking his head. Well, no. Probably something like it. I know Jack is like, you know, that's like part of his family, I think.
Actually, I'm hoping to be adopted by Jack so I can take one of his Surface Pros.
But it's been a while, right? I mean, it's kind of like it's almost like the Apple's MacBook line, which hasn't been updated in years now, I think, at least in any significant way. So when they said they were going to announce something last week, I thought, oh, great, they're going to announce, you know, a new Surface Pro 5. But then the word came out that it's going to be an educational thing, and I thought, oh, maybe it'll be a Surface 4 Amateur to follow up, the Surface 3, which I think is a great device and affordable and all of that. But no, it came out with a Surface for education that's too expensive for any kid that I know of. But anyway.
And too expensive for the schools.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's entirely true. And the reason I say that is because it's priced right about the same price point as MacBooks and MacBook Airs,
right,
which people are buying for their kids for college. I know somebody who did that.
I did.
See, yeah.
I think that device will last. I don't think S is going to fly on it. I think the only reason S is on it is because they released S and they needed to put it on something.
Yeah, I think this was another case of Microsoft, and boy, aren't we familiar with this all too well, of having, in this case, two good things to announce and then trying to mash them up into one. You know, this was presented to you by the same people who named things at Microsoft for the last 10 years, probably. I think S and everything they did with education, and I think part of what was lost in this was, if you watch the whole presentation, it was... A part of it was Windows 10S. The bigger part was talking about Office 365 for education and all the enhancements they're doing there, which were some really, really nice things. They're obviously going after Google in this market, you know, and I think based on what they're offering, they've got a pretty compelling case. 10S is a great push for education. You know, people immediately start calling it Windows RT. And anybody who did, I could look them straight in the eye and say, you didn't know what you're talking about, because it's a totally different thing. Maybe Microsoft didn't position it properly, but what you're basically looking at is Windows 10 with the restriction primarily of not allowing things to be installed except through the store. And if you follow closely enough, what you discover is, thanks to Project Centennial, which was all about, now they call it the desktop bridge, you can, as a developer, push your Win32 desktop app out through the store. I can sell my desktop application through the store. Windows 10S, therefore, can run desktop applications. And later this year, they're going to be pushing Office 2016. Out through the store using this methodology.
Right. Okay, so
I think, again, the problem was Microsoft had a lot of good things, and yet the way they delivered it in a presentation totally screwed a whole bunch of stuff up.
Okay, let's back up a little bit.
Over the years, I've said they need to steal Apple's marketing department. Nothing else, just their marketing department.
Yeah. Well, let's back it up a bit and talk a little bit more about Windows 10S. You did a pretty good job summarizing it there, Don. but yeah, that I have to admit, that was my first thought when I heard of it, but it runs on Intel. You can upgrade it to a real Windows 10, in my opinion, Windows 10 Pro. And in fact, it's free until the end of the year. So why have it? Is it purely for management and security?
That's exactly it. That's exactly that. This the real push for 10S is going to be obviously today education. I would not be surprised if Microsoft also pivots on that and starts to push it for certain enterprises, especially when they're pushing Office 365 for Business and for most of the Office 365 corporate, you know, the business plans as you get into enterprise plans, they include Intune, which is their device management, which works on not only mobile devices, but also work, when we say mobile devices, that includes laptops. So I can see 10S being a move towards, again, by controlling the back door of installations, trying to control that, and obviously using store, and then through device management, being able to even control what you allow through the store. I can see it being compelling to education. I don't see it being compelling to the average consumer. Yeah. And again, that's back to Microsoft. They don't clarify this stuff. They just throw it out there and hope that people like the five of us will get up there and talk enough about it to make it clearer for people.
Well, two of us. Yeah.
Word of mouth. It's we tell two friends and they tell two friends.
Well, it might make sense for enterprises like banks and insurance companies where they want to lock down the system. But the problem is there's no Chrome. there's no Google Chrome.
That's a good thing. That's a plus. I've actually, my Surface 3, I have run that since I bought it as probably as if it was S.
Okay. So back to Windows 10 S. In any case, so are any of you going to get anything with Windows 10 S on it? Like one of the cheaper devices that's coming out that I'm going to call them netbooks? Devices?
I would love to see if I could get an ISO of it and throw it on my Surface 3.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Just to play with it. Yeah, I'd love to play with it and see what it's like and what you can and can't do. It's, what I'm curious about, and one thing was kind of interesting, Thorat and his guys found that there's actually a UWP file manager, a file explorer. Hmm. Yeah. And it's been missing that. I mean, you have to have the old x86 file explorer. Yeah. I have the old character map. I have Notepad. All that stuff came on RT even because I didn't have anything else.
That's true.
So I'm wondering how much old x86-ish stuff actually is on it, because I think that's half the problem that RT had. Is you opened it up, you fired it up, it looked like Windows.
Well, you know it's interesting because it's now, it'll be closing in on a year since Project Centennial was first announced to developers, and I can remember the big collective yawn, ho hum, so what about it. And at the time, I think the thought was, well, the Windows Store isn't really ever going to amount to anything, and there's not going to be any significance to it, so why should I go down this route?
Right.
And now, all of a sudden, for anybody who did or was doing it, and it's not difficult. That's the sad part, is so many people just dismissed it. It's not difficult. And now what you're really finding is this is going to be, this is going to be a viable channel for certain individuals. I don't think everybody and their brothers now rushing to get their apps published in the store just because of Windows 10S. But back again to certain segments, certain developer things involved with education, again, and also business apps. And I don't mean line of business internally built. I'm talking of companies that make apps for businesses, back to the enterprise. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how that, and I don't expect it to be immediate, but I expect probably, I'd love to see by the end of the summer what the numbers for App Store apps, for Windows Store apps are when it comes to those that are just using the desktop bridge. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to see where Windows 10S might be. When we see some of the lower priced devices, it might make more sense for students and teachers and things who need to purchase them in large quantities. But moving on now to the hardware side of the announcement, the Windows Surface Laptop, which, unlike the Surface Pro and Surface Book, does not have a detachable screen, although it is a touch screen. So it truly is a laptop versus, a
And an active touch screen with a pen capability, too. So.
Yeah.
Isn't that going to be kind of hard to use a pen with?
Yep.
Yeah.
That isn't in a tablet mode?
They even demoed how hard it was in the announcement.
Yeah.
Trying to, you know, Panos was holding back in and trying to write.
Yeah. There's different schools of thoughts on this. I still believe, Todd, you're not going to be waiting very long for a Surface Pro 5. I got a feeling that's going to come in fairly short order. I don't think everybody thinks that because of this, that means Surface Pro is, you know, doomed or relegated. Absolutely just the opposite. I think Surface Book was kind of we didn't hit it right. You know, if you're going to build a laptop, build a laptop. And Surface Book wasn't a bad piece of hardware, but if you're going to build a laptop, build a laptop. And that's what this is. Yeah. And I don't think it precludes, anything. As a matter of fact, there's already rumblings that we should expect an announcement, and we might even expect something, you know, preliminarily as soon as next couple of days.
Right. Didn't Microsoft announce something, some kind of announcement in Shanghai coming soon?
Yes, yeah. There's something coming up. Yeah.
Yep, and there's that. You've got Build coming up, you know, literally right upon us now. That's going to be happening. I think there's opportunities there. I always question in general the whole idea of touch screens on laptops. Although I know people now who absolutely use them constantly. They not because they're, you know, they just use it at certain points in time, just to touch quickly on things on the screen, just to navigate. Scroll. They don't use it exclusively. Yeah, they don't use it exclusively. But the more important thing is, I liked aesthetically the Surface Book. I like this laptop, the way this looks. I like the hardware specs in it. I don't know if 2017's version of Corinthian leather and Alcantara for a keyboard is necessarily a great thing, but people seem to like it.
I think they missed the boat though on the introductory level. A 4 gig machine back in 2014 would probably be okay. It's 2017. It's just not enough.
Yeah, so I do agree.
But Jack, that's why they only sell it in one color. They don't expect anybody to buy it. Yeah. It's there so they can say it's below $1,000. Starting at.
Doesn't it go up to like over $2,000 for a fully loaded?
Yeah, $2,199.
Yeah.
So that's Jerry,
8 gig, like 5, 12.
Now, Jack,
yeah,
I believe you spent the vast majority of your adult life in education. And so, you know, you were like K through 12, as I recall.
Actually 7 through 7, 8, 9, then 10, 11, 12. I was in the middle school and then the high school.
Okay, so you've got a lot more experience at the school level than any of us do, except, you know, having been students. So from a point of view as an administrator, as a teacher, you know, throughout those years, is this something that, you know, that price point just bothers me? I just can't see it.
I couldn't see spending $1,000 a piece for a machine to go into a computer lab. We have, you know, 30 seats in a lab.
Yeah.
That's $30,000. It doesn't make any sense.
But I think the problem here is what I was saying a little while ago. I think the problem isn't that Microsoft expects that. I think just the opposite, because if you watch the presentation, we also saw all the low-cost devices running and, you know, and then the follow-ups on that. I think, again, the problem is the message was garbled terribly. But people are saying Windows 10 S fails because they're going to make you get a $1,000 computer to run it. And I think I can't believe anybody actually got that message. As crummy as Microsoft can be for delivering a message, unless you only took from a couple of websites the news bites and you didn't watch any of the show, you know, when they did the announcement, you know, I don't think that the intention was in any way, shape, or form to say, okay, if you're in education, here's $1,000 computer you got to buy for your students. They didn't do that at all. I think they should have, personally, I think they shouldn't have even announced the Surface laptop at this announcement. They should have done it at Build a couple of days later. And separated the two and focused on the low-cost machines.
Because the low-cost ones are coming in, you know, $189 and up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's Chromebook territory.
Yeah.
The Surface laptop is Chromebook Pixel territory.
Yeah.
They have
I think they totally, I don't know what possessed them to do it all in one thing. Yeah. And, like we said, to put Windows 10S on that
on
box
high-end machine
to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah, they shouldn't have done it. They should have just kept everything else that they did was fantastic in the presentation. And then they should have talked about some of the devices that are coming out at the low end. And then at Build, 4 days later, 5 days later, they could have had at their first keynote, they could have talked about the Surface laptop and said Windows.
So imagine a Surface 4. Not Pro, but a Surface 4 at $599 with S on it.
Yeah.
That would be good. I would consider
that. Good. Yeah,
with
the option that you press a button, it's Pro if you want it.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
And that's the other question, right? Yeah. So assuming people buy the Surface laptop, how many of these are still going to be running Windows 10S by the end of the calendar year?
The calendar year, by the end of the day they bought it.
Yeah. I think the $189, you'll probably see a lot of people stay there because the people who are going to buy those are either buying them for the kids, or they're going low cost and they're just going to keep it simple. I think, yeah. Are you kidding me? I think that servers may get swamped with all the requests for anybody that's buying a Surface laptop to upgrade. You know, to click and upgrade. I think that's going to happen quickly.
So
I'm not sure you have to go anywhere for it. To validate that it's a license, I think it's probably all in there. It's in there.
I wouldn't be surprised if it just
and it opens it up.
I wouldn't be
it's
surprised.
There.
It's just a bit.
My next question is for John, who's at the the college level. So John, the other message of this thing is they're aiming it at entry level students, but students entering college. So new freshman things. What do you see kids using in college these days?
I see a lot of Macs, a lot of MacBook Pros or MacBooks. I see not as many tablets in the last couple of years. Mostly MacBooks are what I'm seeing, and I see very low cost Windows laptops. So it's almost if your parents were able to help you out, you probably got a MacBook. If you had to get your own, you went to Walmart and you bought whatever the cheapest
and no
HP was,
from what you can tell.
Nope, no Chromebooks.
Okay, that's what I expect.
Yes.
And
MacBook, you mean the thin little one with the one port,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, or, if it's a couple of years old, they have a MacBook Pro from 2015, 2014.
Or MacBook Air, like my daughter.
To some extent. I haven't seen the Airs as much recently.
Interesting.
But anyway, thinking about what I would want one of my students to have, full office. So that would, 10S would tick that box. But then there are occasionally apps that my students have to install that are not in the App Store. So, for example, we use on our campus a product called Respondus Lockdown Browser. It's what's used for test security when you're giving remote examinations. That has to be installed, and that's, an installer you download and click on. I can see our IT department telling students, it'd be really great if Respondus put this in the store through the bridge, but they haven't, so you can't use this laptop. You need to find the computer lab that has the webcam so that you can do this.
Wow. Right.
But that's available on both Macs and PCs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So again, let's go back to scenarios. I agree with you, John. When you're selling to education, you're selling, which is exactly what Apple does with education too, which is you're selling more than just the hardware. You're trying to sell the solution. Again, it's back to Microsoft isn't going to, whether it be at the college level with higher education or K-12, you're going to sell the computer. If you're going to sell S, you're going to sell the computer, you're going to sell S, and you're going to sell Microsoft Office for education, including the device management.
So and we are moving, just as you bring it up, we are moving to Office 365 this year. For at least faculty, staff, and students will be moving along with it off of, they're porting off of Google Apps, and the faculty and staff are coming over from hosted Exchange and all that. So the problem is when students bring their own devices, it's really, you can't even deploy remote device management because you don't own it. So it's just a tricky situation. And being in a school where, you know, I'm in the middle of the Mississippi Delta, which is one of the poorest areas in the country, I can't look in good faith to a student that says, you know, I only have $400 to spend on a laptop. I can't tell them, well, you really need to get something with full Windows 10. I would just tell them now, go buy the cheapest thing you can that still has Windows 10 regular on it, not 10S.
Yeah. So. No, I agree there. And that's why I say, I mean, again, it's
you know,
the sad
thing is, I think you can get a Windows 10S machine and by till the end of the year, upgrade that to Pro, which you can get that laptop cheaper than you could get one with Pro on it in the first place.
Yeah.
Even later with the $50, if you buy a $350 S, spend $50, I still don't think you can buy a Pro machine for less than $400.
Yeah.
You'll get a home.
Sven,
that's weird.
Maybe I missed something, but if you buy a non Microsoft Surface laptop, is that going to have the same option?
Yeah.
To go to
yes. If you buy a copy, if you buy anything with S on it, between now and the end of the year, you can upgrade it to Pro for free. After that, you can upgrade it for $50. Mm-hmm. And it's to Pro, not to Home, which I thought was really bizarre.
Yeah, I find that interesting. That's
because Home to Pro is, you know, $100 or so.
Yeah.
So S to Pro is $50. Home to Pro is $100.
Don't tell me
that's weird.
They might not know.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I think the, there's still, and this is a problem. I would think, never mind Microsoft, but Google would also have the same problem. When it comes to higher education, you're back to the same trials and tribulations of BYOD. You know, you do. You know, it's not like where you're seeing in K through 12, whether it be through, for a while it was Apple trying to do it with tablets and, you know, with in that route, and then selling hardware, additional hardware. Google's tried to do it with Chromebooks. There's much more control. It's not a BYOD market. It's almost the educational equivalent of the corporate-owned world where you're doling them out. But I think from the higher ed standpoint, I don't see where S works unless a university is willing to dole out the hardware and then provide the end-to-end solution. I just don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't see it logistically being. Now there could be. I mean, for the price of some tuitions at some private institutions, you think
they come
be
with a laptop? They do. Yeah. Some of them do. Yeah. Colorado School of Mines does. I mean, when you matriculate, you get your laptop.
Yep. Yeah,
and that stays with you. It's what you get.
Yeah,
you paid for it.
What do you guys think of the four color choices?
They have four colors.
Yeah. I think it's different.
What I find really interesting is you can only get those four color choices on one model.
Yeah,
the 8 gig 256.
Oh, the higher. Yeah, higher end.
The other three models are silver.
Yeah,
at this point. Yeah. I'm sure that's going to change, but I think it's just a matter of that's the price point that everybody's going to buy.
And the fuzzy
so
keyboard.
That's what they laid in. So that's what they laid in a lot of.
Yeah.
And if people start buying the higher end ones, they'll probably start making them in more colors and piss off the people who bought the silver and really wanted the burgundy.
Oh, yeah.
I have to say, you know, I hardly ever worry about what color my notebook or laptop is. I have
how gauche.
You know, it's whatever I can get for a reasonable price. And yeah. So I don't even know if I have a choice. Like when I bought a Dell laptop a number of years ago, it's, well, you can get black or black.
And any color you want, as long as it's black.
Right? My MacBook Air in front of me, well, you can get silver, and there's also silver.
You know? Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to have that option, but is that going to be my make or break? No. I find it fascinating with phones, which obviously are far more personal to people than laptops. But even then, it's the same thing. It's like, wow, if you told me I had to buy this really garbagey phone so that I could get the choice of colors, I don't think I'd be jumping to the garbagey kind of phone right away.
Yeah, and phones are kind of a funny little critter because the moment you get a phone, you usually put a cover on it anyway. You never see.
Yeah, look how beautiful my phone is under this cover.
Yeah.
So yeah, not.
I see a nice purple laptop behind John there.
I think it's
that
red.
Would be my wife's though. It's purple. It's purple.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So since we were talking about phones, last quick topic. What do you think about the rumor of a new Surface phone? Well, not a new, a Surface phone emerging sometime.
Well, my thought on this is what will be there next? Because I know some of our friends have been very optimistic, some of the diehards from the Windows Phone era that have even said things like, well, maybe they're just going to slap a 50 megapixel plus of this, plus of that, plus a variable RAID speed shutter, you know, whatever. I don't know if that's necessarily what they mean by it won't look like a phone today, but what will it look like? That's what I'm curious about.
Go ahead, Jack.
I truly believe after seeing this, there was a filing for a patent that Microsoft had. I've seen it twice. Most recently, within the last 3 or 4 days, somebody posted it. And it shows that it's almost like a book that would open up. And it appears to become one big screen. Hmm. It's very difficult. And if that's to interpret what their intention is, but if that's the case, it could serve as a phone, but then almost serve as a...
small tablet.
As a small tablet. So it would be interesting, and I think it would be certainly worth investigating. I certainly hope that they come up with it, because I don't know what I'll do when my 950 XL dies. I'm not going to go to an Android, and I'm not going to go to an iPhone, so I'll probably go back to the old crank telephone.
You can probably pick up a Symbian or something.
There's some old palms laying around, I think.
The form factor I really wish we'd see was something similar to what Asus did a few years ago with the Pad phone. But it needs to be a good tablet. You know, I had a Surface that a phone popped out of the back of so I could take it places and then pop it in, and that would be my full computer, that would be a really nice solution. But it seems like when that's been tried, nobody's had any interest, probably because it's been a really crappy product they put together with an interesting form factor.
Well, do you remember? It was not that long ago that Motorola had the one phone that was plugged in. And then at the same time, we had Microsoft with Continuum, you know, but we never saw something really emerge like that. I mean, between those two, if you kind of merge the two technologies, the ideas between the hardware and the software, that's kind of what we're talking about. One thing's for sure. Microsoft, while they're not manufacturing, that they're still producing the operating system. They're still kind of putting the screws wherever they can to any third party. Never mind HP is a major player. But, I mean, there's also heaven knows how many in China that manufacture phones. They're still trying to get third party device manufacturers to buy in the meantime. you know, we all know how successful or unsuccessful, more importantly, that tends to be as a strategy. You know, people say, is there going to be another, you know, Windows phone or a Surface phone? I honestly don't know at this point. I don't think anybody can say, including, I kind of question whether anybody in Redmond can say definitively whether or not there is at this point, because there's so many ideas bouncing around. And you know, even when I hear, you know, comments like, well, yeah, we're going to make a phone, but the next phone you see won't be a phone. You know, I feel like I'm waiting for the Mad Hatter to show up next, you know, and say something. I don't know. The bottom line, though, is that they still have, there's still a place for it, obviously, and they still feel enough confidence to build the operating system for it. It's just what's going to come of it. I really don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. A couple of things are coming together. I mean, I've got an HP Stream 7 sitting here. It's 7 inches. Yeah. That's not that much bigger than phone size.
Yeah.
It runs a full copy of Windows.
Yep.
Not really well, but it runs a full copy. But it's old. And they've demonstrated Windows on ARM. So it's a full copy of Windows running on the same chip, essentially, that my 950XL does. If my 950XL ran Windows on ARM, a full copy of Windows, that now is a full computer. I can already hook a keyboard and a mouse to it. Windows has the ability to run an external display. I don't need Continuum for that. Yeah. I just need a port on my XL. I just need a place to plug it in. You know, I could plug that into a laptop-y sort of thing that, you know, several people have built and built them wrong. I think HP did theirs right, but they want $600 for it. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, a keyboard and a screen that I just one cable to my phone, and it's a full laptop.
Okay, but
I
was just saying, I'm so curious.
I don't know if anybody buy it, but
I'm just so curious what Jack's going to do after his 950XL dies.
Talking to him anymore. He's obviously not going to have a phone.
No, I'll still have my Surface, and I'll go back to an old flip phone, I guess.
We're going to start texting you a lot then, just to make you suffer. Do you realize that?
No, I think Sven was right, though. I think HP, with the Elite X3 and the LapDoc bundle, is a pretty good idea. And if they come up with a new Surface phone that would plug into a something like the LapDoc that they have, I think it would be pretty cool. I mean, as John,
I think the XL will plug into it right now.
Say that again, Jack.
If they could literally take the phone and slide it into this LapDoc, so you wouldn't see the phone anymore. Now it's, you know, you're dealing with a laptop, and then if you needed it as a phone, you can just pull it out and put it in your pocket and walk away.
It could slot in as the touchpad.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean the LapDoc that HP makes is $600.
Yikes.
Yeah. That's a lap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if it was 200, I'd own one.
Yeah.
I'd own one just to see if it works on my XL. I think it would. I honestly think it would.
The HP Elite that little charging station is it's $800.
Yeah.
The HP Elite with the LapDoc bundle is $1,300. I can't justify spending that kind of money.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, there.
Like I said, it was $200. I mean, it's a keyboard and a screen and a battery.
I think part of the problem with Continuum, and I'm curious what you guys think, but I think part of the problem with Continuum was, for years, this has been the way Microsoft has been thinking, is take a restricted operating system like Windows Mobile and then try to make it behave like a laptop operating system. And that's what Continuum does with resizing and everything else. But you're still restricted to the fact that this can only run certain apps.
One at a time.
Do certain things. Now, what if the thought was, we'll take the form factor of the Elite X3 and put Windows 10, build the operating system to say, I want my full operating system. And this was back to where you were talking about ARM, Sven.
Yeah.
But the key is, instead of making the restricted operating system try to behave like the full operating system, why not make the full operating system, when it's on the phone and the phone's form factor, behave like a phone?
Yeah.
And when I do dock it, guess what? I can run all the apps I want.
In Windows.
In Windows. And it's true Windows. I think the problem is that they've always been working inside out. You know, they've always gone from most restrictive and then pretend to be like it's a real desktop. When instead it should be, I should have the full desktop. And I get, for years, the hardware just wasn't there. Guess what? Yep. The hardware's there now.
Yep.
Take Windows 10 and then say, when it gets shoved down to a, you know, a 5-inch screen or a 6-inch screen and it's on the phone, make it behave like Windows Mobile, you know, like Windows Phone, as Windows 10 Mobile.
Almost tablet mode. Almost tablet mode. You know, it's got just got little squares on it. You punch them and you open up an app at a time.
If you do that and then provide the right accessories, whether it be lap docks or sliding into it, I think you then have what people have thought would be the Holy Grail for the longest time. It starts to get frustrating. Like I said, it wasn't frustrating a few years ago because you immediately said it's just not, it's technically not possible with today's hardware. We're there now. And the fact that we're still seeing this OS try to behave like a desktop OS when its very core restricts it is kind of crazy to me. I just don't get it. I think the success, if they wanted a true run at success and they wanted the true phone that could behave like a laptop or a desktop, they should take the other approach.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, with Continuum today, I'm stuck with one app on the screen.
Yeah.
I can't even do side by side. I could do that with RT.
Yeah. No.
You know, I could at least have two side by side.
And it's frustrating. And again, what apps can you run? You know, what apps are really built for Continuum, for even the ones that run on the phone? Which ones really do properly behave when you're in Continuum? I just think it's crazy.
I'll tell you what's funny. I've noticed many times in watching Microsoft people do demos, when they bring up Continuum and your little start menu pops up, when I do that, 75% of them are grayed out because they won't run.
Yeah.
When Microsoft's presenters do that, there's not a single one that they have there.
Yeah, well, they may. It's
yeah, they made
a good demo.
Specifically, is that you don't see anything. Well, that one won't run and that one won't run. Everything they have loaded on their start menu will run in Continuum.
Exactly. You're supposed to screenshot that and then set up your phone to run the same.
Yeah.
Lower your standards and expectations. Lower your standards and expectations, and you'll be good to go.
That's the educational system, too, isn't it?
Okay, folks. Well, we are running well over an hour in this recording, so I'm going to call it a day, or for you guys a night, I guess. I want to thank, going backwards this time on my screen anyway, Jack Cook. Thanks, buddy. Good to have
you. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Don Sorcinelli and Sven Johansson. Joining
me
and my buddy John. So
me and what's his name over there? Yep.
I had to look at you and go, what is your name?
That guy with the funny earrings in his ears.
The ear pods. And so John's gonna have to review this podcast and go, how do I sound? It'll be interesting. It is an interesting problem, you know, the choice of microphones and all of that. I've been using like a couple different mics over the years, and what am I using now? Snowball or something like that. I think it sounds okay. But at any rate, thanks, gentlemen. Podcast number 205 is in the can.